and I want to acknowledge for the committee members that we did submit a group of questions to OMAP, and they did respond, and we have their report here, both from the Office of Medical Assistance Program and the OMAP group, and would encourage members to read the responses to our questions. Probably confuse you a little bit more. And we are going to continue on. We're going to have Scott Gallant to come up and testify, and then we'll have an update on the OHP 2 waivers, and then we'll have a discussion on where do we want to go from here after that, if we can.
Right. Mr. Chair, I guess just mentioned too, Senator John Minnis also introduced some written testimony.
That's correct. John Minnis did submit information indicating that he didn't feel that the program is being implemented as legislature intended, and we need to respond to that, again, to some of his questions. So we need to acknowledge that when we get into the discussion among the members here, if we can.
And can we go ahead and submit that to the record?
We are going to
well.
Submit that for the record. Uh-huh.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, Scott, you want to come up and confuse us a little more? Well, Senator Carner's back?
I'm back.
Are you? I didn't know you were gone. You've been very... No, you've been very quiet. You speak up if you have a question.
Okay, I'm sure we'll let you know I will.
Okay.
Where are we now? Are we ready for a motion or something?
No, we're still cogitating here. We're going to have Scott Gallant testify. He was signed up for as a witness to testify, and then we're going to have an update from Gene Thorne on the OHP 2 waivers, and then at that point we're going to go into discussion on what we're going to do from here. Okay, we'll tell Scott to hurry up.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Scott Gallant. I represent the Oregon Medical Association. We have approximately 6,500 members, a bit over that actually, of physicians. The association was very involved in this legislation when it was originally introduced last session by Representative Bates, actually, on the House side, and in fact helped to and participated in the drafting of the original bill, which essentially began this process and ultimately became Senate Bill 819. We, of course, encouraged you and the legislature to hold extensive public hearings on the legislation. Unfortunately, that didn't happen, and a compromise was ultimately drafted and adopted through, as I recall, the Ways and Means process, which became Senate Bill 819. In our view, the policy for this process is the correct policy for patients, particularly for the state, as a policy of trying to hold down pharmaceutical costs, something that the legislature many times, particularly in regard to the Oregon Health Plan, have considered options to hold down costs associated with that program. As you know, last session, the increase in the pharmaceutical portion of the budget went up 60%, and this is, in fact, to some degree, a response to that particular concern. The bill that ultimately passed in our evaluation, in fact, is broader and provides the state with greater discretion to proceed than the bill that we originally helped draft and supported during the session. We believe that the HRC is, in fact, doing the very thing, the very difficult task that you asked them to do based on clinical information, scientific information, to make evaluations of what medications are the most effective. And they have done that. The legislation then said that the secondary concern were costs. And that has been a segregated process, which it should be, to make a objective determination of which medications will be most appropriately used. Now, I believe the previous testimony seemed to suggest that physicians or others would not have the opportunity to have additional information that the pharmaceutical industry might want to provide on their particular medications that because they were not on the preferred drug list. You know, I am really not aware of an inability of the pharmaceutical industry to communicate not only with physicians, but with the public in very public ways, either television, personal visits, written correspondence, or any number of ways. Our opinion is that the bill is, in fact, accomplishing the very thing you have delegated to them to do. I've also noted previous testimony regarding the broad-based cost-effectiveness evaluation. That was raised in a number of settings by the industry in the past. I have not seen any credible studies that would, you know, that have been done to use that as a evaluation method in regard to reductions in hospital stays and other changes. And again, I think the resources are available to the industry to have those evaluations done, hopefully in an objective manner, to make that case if they so choose. But it's really kind of an old argument. And most of the arguments are kind of circular. You know, the point of the advertising of many of the products on television essentially imply the superiority of particular medications versus some other competitive drug. Well, the HRC, in fact, found, at least in one case, that there was not a more effective medication. And so, rightfully so, the issue is, in a free market, should someone purchase the most cost-efficient drug with a product that has no difference for the patient? And the answer, I would think, in a free market process is absolutely. That would be the rational thing to do. So you as decision makers, in fact, enabled the state and physicians to have information that is objective and appropriate in making determinations on appropriate prescriptive writing for their patients under the Oregon Health Plan and possibly in the private sector as well. The other, I think, major issue that was raised was the exception process, and would physicians be confused or befuddled or intimidated by that process of writing do not substitute or medically appropriate, or leave it alone, fill the prescription, or whatever manner they would choose to clearly indicate that the prescription that they wrote for their patient, in case they do have a particular reaction to a particular medication, is that physicians will easily be able to say, do not substitute a medication that is appropriate for their patients. That was an issue of importance to the Medical Association. It was included in the original bill in 819, and we believe that it is not a particular problem for practicing physicians. And I just happened to see the letter submitted by Senator Menas, who I respect to a great degree. We simply disagree with his evaluation of the process that you've heard about today and how it is operating, and we think it is, in fact, the appropriate process under the authority provided to the HRC, OMAP, in implementing this program. Thank you very much.
Any questions for Scott? Thank you very much for your testimony, Scott. We are going to go into the OHP2 waivers, and then we are going to have a discussion among ourselves. As you know, this commission is supposed to recommend to the E-Board what we do with this process, and we need to have a discussion among ourselves about if we need to do either a form of motion to send to the, that we recommend it continue or we discontinue, or what the commission wishes to do with it. So after the discussion, pardon?
I think Senator Carno wanted to be part of that discussion, but she can't stick around with us on the cell phone for very long.
Okay. Gene, do you want to bring us up to date on the...
I can do that quite quickly if you'd like me to do that.
Okay, if you will, that'd be okay.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. It's Gene Thorne from the Governor's Office. I was asked to update you on negotiations with Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. We submitted the waiver request at the end of August. We have asked the federal government to try to expedite our request and provide us with approval by August 1st. We've had two conference calls. We had one 2 weeks ago that included CMS, some other staff within the Health and Human Services and OMB, and we had another call yesterday just with CMS. They had a number of questions for clarification. They seem to be, we seem to have satisfied their concerns. It's not clear yet whether OMB will have a concern about federal budget neutrality. Didn't seem to be in their first conference call, but CMS noted yesterday they had not had a chance to follow up with them, but we think we're okay there. There were two primary areas that they raised of concern or for discussion. One had to do, as you may recall, we asked that for the movement on the line on the regular prioritized list of condition treatment pairs, that we have some kind of expedited process, because in the past this has gone on months and sometimes years before we have an answer from them. They asked us for a proposal. We outlined a couple components, one of which would give us an answer for sure within 90 days, with some back and forth at 30 days and 30 days, and then the last 90 days. We also asked that they have some designate some staff there who are familiar with the list and can review this on a regular basis, because one of our issues of concern is each time there's a request, they bring in new physicians, we have to orient them, they have to ask the same questions. They seemed open to that. They had some concerns about some of the pieces of the process we were suggesting, and said they would provide a counterproposal, and we hope to talk with them in the next couple of days. But that piece seems to be moving along fine. The other area is more concern, and at this point we are standing our ground, and that is for those people who enter through FEOP. They want us to screen all enrollees to determine if they would be otherwise a mandatory Medicaid eligible. So this would be the people who would be pregnant women to 133% of the federal poverty level, kids under 19 to the federal poverty level, kids under 6 to 133% of the federal poverty level. And then if they're mandatory, they are saying we must enroll them in Medicaid. We are very clear that we believe that families should have a choice, that if someone is eligible for OHP Plus and is eligible for FEOP, it's up to the family to decide where they want to receive their services. Many families right now in FEOP, we provide in information at the time in the program brochures, at the time they go on the reservation list, at the time they apply, that says you may qualify for the Oregon Health Plan if you're under this income, or if you have a child under this income, and here's how you would go about finding that out. And also, people have an ability at any time to move from FEOP to OHP+. So we believe the issue of choice, families currently know that those choices are out there, and many choose to stay in FEOP because they want to keep the family together in a single network. They don't want the stigma of having a Medicaid card. They may find better access through the private sector. And the comment yesterday from the CMS official was that we believe it's, we meaning CMS, it's more appropriate for a Medicaid mandatory client to receive their services through Medicaid. We disagree and are now planning on saying to whom does the governor need to speak about this? Because it seems clear that it needs to be moved up to the next level. So that isn't, I would say at this point, that's the primary issue of contention. As far as we can tell, there are not any other significant issues. They seem to be taking our request to have approval by August 1 seriously, and so have been pleased with their responsiveness. Just a couple of updates beyond that, so you're aware, because the waiver was not submitted until May, it's requiring we bump back some of our timelines. We still do, if we receive approval by August 1st, plan on bringing the FEOP expansion up as of October 1st. They can't finalize their marketing materials until we know what the federal government is going to require, and since this issue is about FEOP, can't finish that until we have that dealt with. And so they plan on aggressively marketing to the employer group, and then would have subsidies effective October 1st. On OHP standard, the changes there are much more complex because we have new benefits or in different benefits. We have new copay requirements. We have new premium policies. We have new tracking requirements. These are all major systems issues for DHS. And so there's a lot of systems work that needs to occur. At this point, we believe if we do receive approval by August 1st or close thereafter, we can have those changes effective December 1st. So that would be both the changes in actually establishing the OHP standard package and then opening OHP standard to 110% of the federal poverty level.
Gene, do they have to approve the entire program? Can't they say approve the FEOP program and take a little longer on the...
Well, Mr. Chair, I think the concern is the way in which they would want us to operate FEOP is kind of fundamentally at odds with how we believe FEOP should be operated. Because if we either have to say to a family, you need to send your child over to go through Medicaid, or we have to take the FEOP program and put all of the application requirements that we have for Medicaid on FEOP, that will also increase the administrative costs. So their issue really is with FEOP. And so we're standing our ground at this point, have provided them the materials we've had to show that people have the information and at any time they could go back to or choose to go to OHP Plus. It did stop them for a minute yesterday when we said, so if a woman is part of a family in FEOP and she becomes pregnant, are we supposed to drop her from the private sector plan and go enroll her in Medicaid? They didn't have an answer to that, but said, well, probably not. So we think we have a good argument with where we are. So we are, at this point, that is the issue, the primary issue we're dealing with.
Okay. Well, we're hoping that the FEOP program will work, because I think that's still where you're going to get the most services with the dollars we have to spend. So
we're pleased that as far as they don't seem to have major concerns with other parts, and we think we've got a good defense on this one, and that it will take moving it up to higher levels within HHS.
It's also important we're able to adjust the service level line as quickly as we can.
Yes. And we feel like we're at a place where we're going to be able to come to resolution easily on something that certainly will be better than what we've had in the past.
Okay. Any other comments?
Just timelines again. You're working for an approval of the entire waiver by when?
August 1.
That's real soon.
That's, yes, a week from Thursday. We don't know if we'll get August 1, but we think from the indications we have, we would hope it would be very soon thereafter.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much for that. No, let's get into the discussion on what we want to do with the testimony that we've heard, the information we've gotten. Is not really too clear sometimes. I think we have some questions about where we want to go with this thing. So let's open up for discussion and see what we want to do. Do we want to send anything to the e-board? Do we want to say continue on the same path? Do we want to have they made any changes in the direction? I think Marjorie has been involved in this. Maybe she could make a couple of comments about the involvement she's had with the director.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I did take the opportunity to attend a majority of the first four drug classes and their subcommittee meetings, and I attended the first one thinking, well, I'll only stay for an hour, and stayed the entire time, and for some reason got hooked. It was a fascinating process, and I would first like to say there's a first time for everything, and it's I wouldn't fault the Health Resources Commission or the staff in some of the confusion that I think came about, because it appeared to me that the process wasn't clearly outlined from the beginning, just how the subcommittees would proceed and how they would respond to the Health Resources Commission, how the subcommittees were appointed and then finally approved by the Health Resources Commission, and then what sort of information would be provided to the subcommittees and how their discussions would eventually come up with a final recommendation that would then be returned to the Health Resources Commission. You know, the Evidence-Based Process Center, they did an amazing job in a very short period of time with a lot of data, and it just seems that the data isn't out there, what people were expecting to find, and I think that's what you heard today. So
I think the question that I have, when you read the written report from the HRC, it says there's not evidence that would show that one drug is more effective than another drug in the class of drugs. And then OMAP coming along and picking, based on cost, what drug they would allow to put on the list, without, in other words, HRC didn't consider any cost effectiveness. It was just strictly, and it didn't really, when you read the conclusion, it doesn't really say, well, all the drugs are equal. If it said that we have these five drugs and there isn't any difference in it, they all provide the same service, but when you read the conclusion, it says there wasn't any evidence that there was differences.
Well, Mr. Chair,
that's what's confusing to me.
I think that's the fundamental question that's being asked here, in that for the majority of the first four drug classes, it appeared that the evidence didn't identify that one drug was more effective than another.
But it wasn't less effective.
Exactly. So you can't assume that all of them are equally effective just because one hasn't been shown to be more effective than the other, or less effective, to be honest. However, that appears to be the assumption. So I think that's where some of the sticking point is, and that's instead of being more or less effective, they're all equally effective. However, the evidence may or may not show that. That wasn't the question that was being asked. Are they equally effective? No. Is one more effective? So if they had asked that question, are these drugs equally effective, maybe you would have a different answer.
I guess that's the question we need to respond to.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess part of my concern here, and it really, I think even what we went through today is a classic example of, you know, thinking that we're saying one thing and then finding how it gets interpreted a different way. Throughout, I think the concerns that were described today, I didn't hear one single concern with what the HRC was doing in the way it evaluated these drugs. It was nothing but platitudes over, you know, how commendable these group of volunteers were in going through such very detailed analysis about the effectiveness of these drugs, whether they're effective or not. And then, and yet, you know, most of the testimony in support of what has resulted has been, you know, just how it's like very defensive about what the HRC's work was. To me, that was never the issue. It was strictly, you know, once the HRC made their determinations on effectiveness or no effectiveness, the quote from one was that there was insufficient evidence to draw conclusions about the comparative effectiveness of some drugs, then what does OMAP do with it? And what we found was, I think, there the disconnect between Senate Bill 819 and I think ultimately the way these rules are starting to come out. Certainly the issue on Section 2-sub-3 of Senate Bill 819 was having public consideration, you know, public, you know, looking for, you know, some kind of you know, public hearing when OMAP is making the decisions on the cost of these drugs. And here we've got two rules now that are final on two groups, and we don't have any public testimony on how that the cost resulted as far as part of the decision making. And them saying that, yeah, ultimately, if everything's all equal, you just look at price. Well, the statute doesn't say that. What it's looking for is that it's looking for relative cost based on the effectiveness of the drug. And it's also looking at, in essence, trying to find, or that we're looking for the most effective drug or at the best possible price. Well, best possible price doesn't necessarily mean it's the cheapest. It means for, you know, given the effectiveness of that drug, we get the best price we can, you know, by working with the drug companies or wherever, and that's, you know, worth the effort, I guess, to place it on the OMAP list. And instead, you know, they're looking more for, you know, what's turning out to be just a reference-based system of saying, here's the cheapest, and everything has to apply to that.
So how would you like to see it changed so that it would meet your criteria of what you need?
Well, I think certainly the most obvious concern to me is that we're not getting, or that we need to see more public involvement, or at least a public hearing on how they are determining the final list.
But and they've written the rules, and they are going to have public hearings on those rules. Is that correct?
Well, but we already have two rules already in place that didn't have a public hearing on how they determine, for instance, of the five drugs that you know, they were all found not to be, none of them found to be more effective. Okay, somehow OMAP whittled that down to two. Okay. So they've, or three, they've eliminated two of them. And there was no discussion publicly on how they came up with that final list. We see on the cholesterol-lowering drugs, and that's one where there's a rule that's just been proposed, and there's going to be a hearing on that. You know, there's what we need to see, I guess, is how is it that if they are coming up with, the HRC comes up with three drugs, and now in their proposed rule, they're down to two. Okay, what are we going to see in a public hearing that shows how they remove that one drug from the HRC list?
Okay, so you would like to see public input on the selection of the drugs from OMAP? And is that what I hear you saying?
Right. It's just ultimately, how do they get to the final list? I mean, what if they're not using just the HRC list and they're still whittling it down using cost factors? And to me, it's best possible price, and it's not the most, it's not the cheapest. You know, then I think there has to be some kind of public hearing showing, you know, how they get to that choice. And it's, I think as we heard from the first panel, it's not just a matter, you know, where the pharmaceuticals have complained in the past that they don't want to disclose confidential information about their rebate plans that they have with the state. That is a competitive issue, you know, with their products. But there's a number of other issues that you look at to determine, you know, what's the best possible
cost. How would you do that? Tell me the process you'd like to see happen.
Well, I think that what we heard earlier is the way you do it. It's not just saying, okay, here's the price per pill, but we look at those kinds of drugs that you're trying to determine what their dosage is, what the effectiveness is, how often, you know, is it that it's prescribed per day, whatever, and then, from what it sounds like, AstraZeneca testified that there are other states where they have already provided this kind of cost information, and it's been analyzed without violating any kind of, you know, market competitive issues, no confidentiality issues. So I think there's provisions for that that's already been adopted around the country. We just need to follow those. I'm also concerned that, where we have specific statutory language that states certain, there are certain exceptions for certain types of drugs that go towards either the chronic conditions that Senator Fisher mentioned, or for some of those like HIV or cancer, that to me, I was concerned with the response from OMAP saying, oh, well, all a doctor has to do is just write do not substitute, and that's going to comply with the statute. I think that when we, as a legislative body, and even the governor, passed this law that said very specifically, the department may not limit those kind of drugs, you know, that you don't throw out a limitation on a drug and then when it's found to be used for something else, that that basically it's just being treated by saying, oh, well, just, you know, it's up to the doctor just to say do not substitute. Well, that wasn't the requirement in the law. So I think that, you know, that kind of issue has to be addressed on how, when there's a specific mandate by the statute, but, you know, they do not put any kind of barriers in front of the physicians to prescribe those kind of drugs.
Mr. Chair, along that line, just if OMAP did not refer to that particular ORS reference that had to do with the preferred drugs, would then I think solve that problem, because my concern is that even though they said that they're not going to do it, all of us know that sometimes that when you say that and if you reference it to something that's already existing in the statute, that they will reach back and get it. And so my concern is that you're muddying the water along with what you're saying, and particularly looking at prior authorization issues. I would prefer that they not reference in this particular, carrying out this particular legislative mandate, not to reference the prior authorization statute in the same context that they're doing with this.
Okay, so that's a question that we could ask OMAP, if you could write them and ask them if they could eliminate that, or what would happen if they did eliminate it. Let me ask a question. In Section 3, it says the Department of Human Resources shall adopt the practitioner-managed prescription drug plan, the Oregon Health Plan. Purpose of the plan to ensure that enrollees of the Oregon Health Plan receive, get down to the second paragraph. Before adopting the plan, the department shall conduct public hearings and consult with a health resource commission. Do you feel like that, what I heard you saying, that that was not done, Representative Doyle? Section 3, number 2, says before adopting the plan, the department shall conduct public meetings and consult with the Health Resource Commission. Do you feel that that was not being done? What I heard you say?
Yes, and I think it's in part because of what we have in Section 2, sub 3, because we're asking for public consideration, and I guess I do look at it as just some weak wording in the legislation. I mean, what I found in a different matter when we were dealing with the Secretary of State on the redistricting issue was that, you know, the courts were looking at, you know, they're considering or having the statement was, or the part of the statute was that the Secretary of State only considers certain things. And the Secretary of State pretty much response was with a shrug saying, yeah, I considered it. I just didn't believe that. I just didn't give it the weight that maybe others thought I should do. And I'm concerned about the same thing here. If we get OMAP responding saying, well, yeah, we considered the effectiveness of the drug through HRC, and we've considered the relative cost, that they can still go off to a reference-based formulary you know, without regard to, I think, the intent of the other parts of this legislation. And to me, it ultimately comes back to having that public airing of those issues and having them be on the record on how they came up with these decisions. So then they can either be challenged in court or they can, you know, come back to the legislature next session to see whether they're in compliance or whether we have to make changes.
So what I hear you saying is that you don't feel that information as to how they selected the drugs from the HRC recommendations, you don't see how that was decided.
That's correct.
So you want information from OMAP as to how they decided to use to pick the particular drugs they did from the list that was given to them by HRC.
Correct.
Is that a question that we should ask them? Is that what you're saying?
Well, first and foremost, it needs to be done in a public forum.
Okay.
So if they have not done that on these, then certainly we do need to ask that question.
Okay.
And I think the expectation, though, from us should be that those kind of decisions are going to be made in a public forum so that, you know, those who are concerned about those, you know, that they're complying with the law, we'll be able to see that in a direct manner.
What I'd like to see us do is to write some of the things that we would like to see the agencies complete.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can recommend to the e-board, just, these are the questions that need to be responded to, and perhaps we can do that during an e-board meeting, if that's what we want to do.
Yeah.
So if we could come up with ideas of, well, you don't think we've had sufficient information.
Right.
We could do that.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to... along that line, follow the paper trail of where rebates come into and where they go into and where that money is used. It's my understanding that it doesn't go back to the human resources, it goes into the general fund. Now, I don't know, there may be some ways of following that up. If those are kickbacks that could be used if they went into, for instance, human resources to get matching funds, as some of the monies do, like license fees and things like that, where they're paid back and they also then can be utilized to pay for other things that get matching funds. I would like to find out exactly where that money goes, how much it is, and what it's doing, and ultimately where we dispense it out. If it just goes into the general fund and we use it to pay other bills.
You want an explanation of what happens to rebates?
Yeah, thorough explanation, and how much money we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing, I guess, that bothers me, because you're dealing with a little bit of hocus pocus here. If they're looking at strictly at cost, but they're not getting the rebate, so they're not considering that as part of the cost, that could be a factor. If one company gives a 20% rebate, but they're 5% higher on the drugs, they might wind up being in the market in the whole process because of the ultimate exact cost to the state. So I don't know if they're figuring that in or thing. I also would like to add to that and find out if there was anything done whatsoever other than just the silo effect that these costs have on OMAP. I'd like to find out if they considered anything involved with these drugs, with whether they kept somebody out of a more intensive care or that kind of thing, and if that was in any of the consideration of the costs of these things, because at one time, I know, not that long ago, that was no consideration at all in what they did with their budget and how they considered saving a buck in OMAP's budget.
Would it be fair to say, tell the e-board that there was some confusion in the testimony given by the industry and given by the HRC as to the evidence, the industry felt the evidence was not available to pick one drug over another? where the agency was pretty plain that, there was adequate evidence, and that the evidence showed that there would be a group of drugs that really made no difference in the effectiveness, that the one was as effective as the other. That was sort of, I thought, a little bit confusing.
Well, I think Senator Minnis summed it up pretty well in his testimony in that particular issue, because his statement is that here's the evaluation process by the HRC subcommittee on the PPI drugs that states there's insufficient evidence to draw conclusions about the comparative effectiveness of drugs in those classes. And then from Senator Minnis' perspective, and I share this perspective too, that should have been the end of the process for those drugs. What OMAP is saying is that, oh no, you know, it's not that we get that kind of evaluation that says there's insufficient evidence and then we're not supposed to classify them. That just means, you know, instead of saying that we can't find a way to find, you know, one drug that's more effective than any others, then from an OMAP perspective, we just then go to the cheapest. And I don't see that that was part of the legislative intent. So I think there's the kind of the essence of conflict with the way OMAP is interpreting the statute and, you know, what at least, you know, some of us are looking at legislative intent.
Mr. Chair, I think the inclusion of more in depth on the cost effectiveness, as I look at what I heard today, that cost effectiveness, once all things were supposedly equal, then you just had the drugs. What wasn't done was whether or not a particular drug allowed a person to go back to work, do some of the other things. Those kinds of economic factors were not, as I heard the testimony today, included. And I think that we'd want to know whether or not there are some other economies when you start talking about ranking based on cost, and if that's not in there. One of the, in our discussion during session, one of the reasons that the drugs for mental health was put in as an exclusion was because we knew that there were certain drugs that allowed the individual to have a better quality of life and so they could go to work, and we didn't want the agency giving them, even though they cost less, those drugs that would actually do the reverse. And so we made a conscious, you know, in that discussion that in the long run, we received an economic payout, if you will, that I don't think was included in this discussion. And if you're going to rank and talk cost effectiveness, it seems to me that somehow you've got to build some factors in there that include those pieces, particularly since we're talking about the agency that is responsible for all of those kinds of problems and issues.
I heard Dr. Baumeister say that, you know, he could go from one drug to the next drug and the next drug, and it really didn't make any difference.
I know I'm dealing with the drugs that deal with mental, that is not accurate.
So you don't.
I don't believe, and that's why I asked him the question, don't you as a physician in some cases be a lot more aggressive in your treatment than you do in others? And I think if you talk to most physicians, they will tell you that based on the diagnosis that they have in hand, that they will be a little more aggressive. My comment that dealt with Representative Hayden, when he talked about over-the-counter drugs, and I said, fine, maybe the over-counter worked for him, but if that was a part of the cost savings, that over-the-counter didn't work for me.
What about, to do what you're suggesting, you'd have to have 1,000 people taking one drug and 1,000 people taking another drug to find out whether there was more people worked in that group than this group.
And I think there's some studies out there that suggest that drugs and their ability to do things for individuals. I know it was there when we did the Hirschhead study too, the one on the psychotropic drugs.
Well, Dr. Baumeister made the statement certain that they did not look at any of the cost effectiveness,
right,
when they were doing it. So I have the same problem that you have, not being medically oriented and knowing then whether, you know, let's say, and I'm just going to use this person as a suicidal. Well, maybe there's five drugs stopping them from being suicidal, but does one allow them to work? Does the other just keep them at home and not commit suicide? That's what I don't know.
Yeah, but I think, though, the testimony we heard from AstraZeneca was that there are cost studies out there, you know, and there's information out there that can provide these kind of cost effectiveness studies, and that it's not just looking at the simple price. And then just as Representative Winter's question, Dr. Baumeistron, is that, you know, even if there are five that are equally effective, then, you know, just because three are cheaper doesn't mean those three are the ones that are going to work for that particular patient. So, you know, why then limit, put a barrier up to the physicians and say you can only pick one of these three without going through the exception process? It'd just be as easy to put all five down.
Well, I can't see how you're going to run tests on 126 different drugs that determine whether they work one day longer this month than the other one.
Well, that's what my point is from the AstraZeneca testimony, was that there are studies out there already. It's not something that they're going to have to recreate. I mean, there are ways for them to identify cost effects.
Don't you think the HRC and the subcommittees would have looked at those?
Well, in fact, Dr. Baumeister's testimony was that they do not look at cost effectiveness. You know, that there has been some information that may have gone into that, but I think it was pretty clear that they were just looking at clinical effectiveness without regard to cost. And so there has to be a secondary analysis on cost effectiveness that just hasn't happened, at least in public.
It appears that that's where the disconnect is.
Yeah. It's between the HRC and the
Enomet.
So how would you change it?
Mr. Chair, I would suggest that we ask for more openness in the process after HRC delivers their analysis to OMAP, that we have information on cost-benefit analysis and what kind of how selections are being made among and between drugs on a list that's forwarded from the Health Resources Commission.
Well, I just point out that when each drug is looked at by Oregon State University, it's $33,000. How many of these studies do we want to do to find out what's more cost effective than the other? I mean, how many dollars do we want to spend on these programs to find out? Yeah, but if they now do a cost analysis, you're looking at another $33,000 to do that. And you got 126 drugs in this one area.
Well, I guess, though, the response to that is that the statute says they have to look at cost. Now, at least the way the first two families have been decided, there was no consultation with anybody on cost effectiveness.
Okay.
So, you know, it seems to me that there are other processes besides asking OHSU to do a similar analysis as they're doing in the clinical analysis for cost effectiveness. And there's got to be a way, and I would suggest that, you know, OMAP and the pharmaceuticals together, you know, would be able to come up with a system that's going to be acceptable. And if they can't, you know, at least after they've, you know, seen at least where their differences are, that's something they can bring that back to us to make some decisions on. But I don't see that, you know, we have to automatically assume that all cost-effectiveness studies are going to be going to OHSU and we're going to get charged $33,000 a drug.
Yes, I would agree with Doyle at that point.
So how would you see it done? Tell me your process of what you see happen.
Well, just initially here, Senator, I don't know that we should prescribe an exact process. this, this second step of the analysis. I think we should leave it to OMAP to come to us with how they're going to create a more open process among the selection of drugs that they are submitted from HRC.
Perhaps this would be a good study for Mr. First.
Tell me what you mean by an open process.
Come up with seven steps.
What do you mean by an open process?
A public process for determining, it has some analysis of the cost effectiveness based upon the efficacy of the individual drug and why they are choosing. So we have, in the case of the PPIs, according to the good doctor who was here, he said they submitted five, the whole list of five, because they could not distinguish one from the other. Well, how then did we decide that these three are going to make the list and these two are not? What is the objective analysis that brought us to that point?
Probably based on price, I would imagine.
The price isn't good enough. It needs to also include an analysis of why. What additional benefits does this drug provide that one does not? And in this case, there may not be any, in this case specifically, there may not be any other determiner. If they're all prescribed exactly the same, they all do the exact same thing, and there are no other side effects or beneficial or negative side effects, they may all be exactly the same. But we need to, at least need to know in their analysis of the second stage of the analysis in selecting a drug, we need to know what kind of thought process is going behind and what attempts to distinguish to make sure we are, in fact, giving the best value to Oregonians. Okay. It's distinguishing between the drugs on a cost-effective basis. And I think we ought to leave that to OMAP. I think our recommendation ought to be that we want them to demonstrate and open this portion of the process up.
Okay. What else would you like to say? Yes.
Chair.
Yes. Go ahead.
I'm going to be pretty soon on the cell phone if you need me for a form or anything.
Mm-hmm. And others, you're telling us to get on with it.
Yeah, I know. Did you have any
I'm just afraid my battery is going to be dead and then I won't be able to hear.
Oh, I wouldn't want you to have a dead battery.
What?
I said I wouldn't want you to have a dead battery. Do you have any comments?
No. I'm listening to everybody's suggestions. I think what Speaker Simmons just said was quite good.
Okay. You want to read the comments that you have written down here?
I didn't write them down.
No, just written them down.
Well, a lot of the comments surround cost effectiveness, how you would encourage OMAP probably to identify cost effectiveness of each of these drugs, and that would probably be a public process or that would be available in a public setting. You also want to, let's see, Senator Fisher was talking about the rebate options, but you want a thorough explanation of rebates and how the rebates are used, how much the rebates, well, not how much the rebates are, but how much the state is getting in rebates and where they go. More openness in the process, so again, I think it's more the OMAP side, the cost side, that you're focusing on. To have it be more of a public process than it was the first go-round. And that you want OMAP to be able to prescribe that public process.
And I don't want them to link... Okay. And I don't want them to link the prior authorization...
Yes.
You got that?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, if we were to submit that report to the e-board, would that be something that would be acceptable to the group?
I would think so, but I think looking at the cost issue is still part of the bigger picture of following the legislative mandate that, you know, both clinical effectiveness and cost effectiveness are considered when making a determination of what prescriptions go on the list.
Okay. All right. Does that satisfy everybody?
Yes.
Okay with that, Bill? Okay. The meeting is adjourned.
No, wait. No. I don't know if you meant to do that. Was that your motion?
We're just going to write a report to you.
Okay, so you're just going to summarize that?
We're just going to summarize it.
And send it to the e-board?
Mm-hmm.
Then there's...
Before we move on with that, though, I mean, is, are we, I mean, there's rules now that are going to be coming into effect August 1. I mean, are we, do we have any impact on, you know, whether that rule, those rules ought to go ahead and be put in place? Can we get OMAP to suspend that, putting that rule in place before these issues have been resolved, or before it works?
We have two issues here. One, is there something here we need to reopen our meeting for? And can we, in fact, is the tape still on?
Okay, we'll open the meeting again.
Bang the gavel? And then there's a process issue around promulgation of rules.
Mm-hmm.
Is there not a process issue that needs to be looked at here?
I guess that's my question. My understanding of the process is that they could go forward with the rule if they choose. And yet, here is a very critical concern.
Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yes.
In other words, you want to hold the process up? Is that what you're saying? Not to implement the rules?
Well, yeah, until we get, I think, something more defined from OMAP on how they have implemented these rules.
How affected among the drugs.
Right.
After they received the recommendation from the health resources.
You want them not to have a public hearing sent on this?
So can I summarize?
Well, they haven't had that problem.
From the committee, I think that you want to ask OMAP to hold off on the rule, that August 1st.
Right.
And I think you want to send some sort of letter, but I'm not clear as to whether it's supposed to go through e-board or just directly to OMAP, stating that you want their process to be more open, more public process-oriented, where they are focusing on cost-effectiveness of the drug, that the clinical effectiveness and cost-effectiveness would be tied together, but we don't want to prescribe a process to them for this public process. And as Representative Winters is saying, that you also want to eliminate the references to prior authorization. I don't quite know how that...
There's an ORS at the same record.
I know we are. So you have two different things that are going on here. You want them to stall on the rule, and you want them to... Would you like them to go back and open the process?
Right.
For the first four classes, even though...
Yes.
Yeah, and
the second stage of the analysis on the first four classes.
See, and this is, I guess this is why I'm not seeing it as two separate things. I mean, I think probably the best way is, as a commission, we are requesting OMAP to, you know, come up with a more open process.
Mm-hmm.
And as they determine the drugs that come on the list, provide us with that information that then is to be submitted to e-board. You know, or it's submitted to us one time before, and as a recommendation to e-board, it gets approved.
You want to have another meeting before e-board September and have them come back and report to us?
That's a good idea.
I think
putting the full process up at this point is not...
I would like to hope it's not really
appropriate.
But all we're holding up is final implementation of a rule that they have not yet shown that they are satisfied. They are complying with Senate Bill 819. So we're asking them to do that. If they, you know, I think as soon as they provide that information, we can meet, say, okay, yeah, this makes much more sense, or here's where we need to, you know, have our concerns. And, you know, at that point, I mean, they can go back on these, the four families they're dealing with right now and just, you know, pop those out just based on, you know, whatever new process they come up with.
I think you're saying somewhat the same thing. I think to open up the process,
mm-hmm.
and then report back to us based on the opening up of the process,
okay.
and we meet again, and then go to e-board,
yeah.
But not to delay or to stall.
To not delay or stall.
Well, they need to have open up hearing.
Okay, but you're delaying installing the implementation of the rule on August 1st.
Yeah, a little bit.
Right?
Right.
Right.
That's the immediate need right now, that's what I'm hearing from you. And then along with that stalling process, you want to say, hey, go back, and we want to see in a public setting your decision-making process on these first four classes.
Right. The OMAP process, not the HRC process.
Exactly.
Right.
The OMAP process, and again, I see that more as cost than clinical.
Yeah.
Because HRC is clinical. And if they can get their process done relatively soon, and you want them,
all the better.
You want them to respond back to the commission prior to the September E-Board.
Yeah, I'll be doing it in the next couple of weeks.
Okay.
I would suggest to you that I'm pretty sure Kaiser Permanente, they can go through this process to choose what drugs they're going to use on this one. Or just the thought.
Okay.
We want to make OMAP private, and then I think that's the problem.
Is that consensus of the committee, then? That's what you want?
Yes.
Okay, then we'll draft that letter and send it out. Senator Klarna, did you hear that?
No, I'd like to have that received.
Does someone else want to do that for her? You're near a microphone.
Okay, I think what we're going to be doing is sending a letter to OMAP requesting that they modify their process to make it more open, as they determine cost effectiveness, and that we ask them to delay implementation of the rules that are set to be effective in August so that this process can be reviewed. And as quickly as they can do that, we will come back to meet again to review that process. And then after that's concluded, hopefully it'll be a recommendation to E-Board to show E-Board the status of the implementation of Senate Bill 819. And then it's also another portion of the letter is addressing Representative Winter's concerns mm-hmm. about the reference to the OIR relating to prior authorization that was not part of Senate Bill 819.
Okay.
So that's what we'll draft and get out.
Did you have something else you want to
say? And the final part of your agenda before you adjourn, in your packets, this is a one-minute summary, you have information on the Oregon Healthcare Cost Index. That's part of the charge to this committee. In fall and winter, I got together with a group of interested parties to talk about this Oregon Healthcare Cost Index and look at the scope. It can be a massive project if you want. And at this time, we've done some research into funding. This project isn't funded, so we talked to the Northwest Health Foundation about procuring a grant, and we were turned down. We've talked to a number of researchers and how they would develop the scope of this project, how much data you would want to include, what data you would want to include, what questions would be asked of the database. So again, in your packet, you have everything that we've done up to this point. And at this time, I think it would probably be best is the commission just release this project to a work group to perhaps review through the rest of the interim and maybe come to the commission with a legislative proposal for next session with the Oregon Healthcare Cost Index a little bit more clearly defined, including the scope and funding.
Is that your recommendation, Mark?
Well, that's what we've researched up to this point, so yes.
Okay, the co-chairs will talk about that.
Okay. Great.
How can I adjourn?
Sure, please do.